Exodus chapter number 14. I saw where you're having a live nativity. We just had one at Ambassador. It was our first shot at it. And you sometimes wonder how the first shot's going to be. But it was really, for us, it was a great time. We were able to circulate 14 cycles of people through our nativity in one night. Let me just tell you something. Chances are you're going to have people come to that nativity that would otherwise not hear the gospel over Christmas. And when you think about that, it ought to send chills up your spine. And it ought to make you excited and say, boy, and be prayerful and say, Lord, please help us to get people under the sound of the gospel. My prayer before our nativity was this: Lord, would you please work in the hearts of little kids that would just bug their parents to death and insist that they go through the nativity, even though their parents maybe wanted nothing to do with it. And then by force, they would have to hear the story. And that maybe God would melt their hearts. And so I'm excited about the outreach that you have ahead of you. And I pray that God would bless it. I pray that many people would come and they would experience it and they'd get under the sound of the gospel. And so anytime I see something like that, my heart gets stirred and I'm excited. You know, I see your theme in pressing forward in faith. And our theme at the college has been one that's somewhat similar. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, just coming right out of Hebrews chapter 11. And so tonight, my prayer is that with the help of the Holy Spirit, that some inventory be done on our hearts. And that God would help us to finish this year strong in our faith. And so to do that, I want you to look with me at Exodus chapter 14. And we'll begin reading in verse number 10. It says that when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, and all of the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And what I've just read to you tonight is a very despairing section of Israel's story. They basically come to the point where they have done something that without a doubt all of us have done. Before you seek to be too harsh on these Israelites, just remember, I think there's a little Israelite in all of us. And what the people of Israel experienced during this time was a paralysis, a numbness that was brought on by their circumstances, and it's something that absolutely paralyzed them at a moment when they needed God the most. And you say, what was it that they did? It was very simply this: they doubted God. And you know, it's possible for a nation to doubt God. I believe it's possible for we individuals to doubt God. And I want to take you on a brief survey of the history of Israel tonight and bring you to the Red Sea. And how Israel, after God had delivered them out of the bondage of Egypt and brought them to the brink of the Red Sea, and they were tempted to think that God had left them for dead. I want you to see how they doubted God and how it paralyzed them and how to do the same for us tonight. You know, when you think about the history of Israel, really at this point, it's relatively early in the nation of Israel. Do you remember Abraham? He gets a promise from God. One night, Abraham and God are taking a stroll, and God says, Abraham, you see those stars up there? Mm-hmm. Well, your children are going to be like the stars. And if that wasn't plain enough, God said, all the sands of the sea, your children, I'm going to give you a great nation, are going to be like the sands of the sea. And God gave that promise to Abraham. Now, the big problem was that at that time, Abraham didn't have a son. Abraham and Sarah would eventually take things into their own hands and make a mess that we still see the results of today in the Middle East. But finally, the son of promise came. That son, his name was Isaac. And God made a promise. He said, Abraham, I'm going to bless that. I'm going to bless the world, and I'm going to bless you through that son Isaac. He's the son of promise, and a nation was born. And that nation became bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually it would find itself enslaved by the Egyptians. The Egyptians enslaved the Israelites, treated them cruelly, and for many years the Israelites prayed, Oh God, please send us a deliverer. What Israel didn't know, that while there were many days they probably thought they were praying and nothing was happening, something was happening. God blessed a couple with a bouncing baby boy named Moses. Maybe I should say tonight a floating baby boy. After he was able, they put him in a basket. And at this time, there was a decree in all of Israel there in Egypt, all amongst the people of Israel, that Pharaoh wanted to kill the men children, wanted to kill the male children. And the reason being is there were too many Israelites, population control. And so this little baby's parents did something that I don't know that I would have ever thought up. They crafted a basket, put the baby in a basket, and put him out on the river. And of all the places, he winds up at Pharaoh's daughter's place. Now, humanly speaking, had I been the one to direct the current that day, the last thing I would have done was direct that baby's basket to the very one whose dad said, kill all the male children. That's exactly what God did. It just goes to show us God's ways are higher than ours. And that woman saw that baby in the basket and she was smitten with him. Took him in as her own. Raised him in the household. And here this young man, his name is Moses, he was drawn out of the water, an Israelite, right in the midst of the royalty of Egypt. And it was not really known to anybody. But there eventually came a day when Moses had to make a choice whether he was going to be an Israelite or an Egyptian. And when that day came, and Moses identified with the Israelites, he turned his back on Egypt, and then for 40 years Moses is on the backside of a desert. Now you want to talk about culture shock. Some of our students experience culture shock when they move from the north and they come to the south. But I always tell them there's just great things down here in the Promised Land. Things like homecoming, a covered dish, fried okra, sweet tea, the list goes on and on. But you want to talk about culture shock? Moses went from being served by servants and living in the lap of luxury, and now he hears sheep 24/7 in the desert. How'd you like to hear that? For our nativity, I found, Pastor, on YouTube, you might want to do this for your nativity, you can find a scrolling video, it's just 10 hours of sheep noises. That's all it is. You say, we can't have sheep at our nativity. Put a Bluetooth speaker behind a bale of hay and just play that for a couple hours. But they listened to it, not just, he didn't listen to it for a couple of hours. It was 24/7, and for 40 years, Moses is on the backside of a desert, and one day he goes out, he sees a burning bush. And he sees fire that's burning it, but it's not consumed, and he hears a voice. And that day, God calls the deliverer of Israel that has been prayed for a long time. And he tells this shepherd, I want you to go to Pharaoh and give him a message. Say, let my people go. And he does. You imagine with me here, this, if I could say it this way, redneck shows up in the middle of a palace. He's nothing to look at. He's a shepherd, and shepherds are reviled by Egyptians. And of all things, he crosses Pharaoh when he says, God has a message, let my people go. Now, it's interesting. It's an adventure after that. Pharaoh said, I'm not going to do it. And God said, all right, I have a way of convincing you. And God sent 10 plagues to the nation of Egypt. These 10 plagues were pestilences and nuisances that God orchestrated in the life of Pharaoh and all of those Egyptians to show His hand mighty to eventually persuade them to let Israel go. I don't have time to preach it tonight, but I will tell you this. One of the beauties of that story is you see that when God sent those 10 plagues to Egypt, it reminds us of this. You know, God won't make you go against your will, but He sure has a way of making you willing to go. And after lice and frogs and water that's turned to blood, eventually the straw that broke the camel's back was when Pharaoh's firstborn died. And finally, Pharaoh says, that's it, I've had enough. And he tells the nation of Israel, I want all of you to take everything. Listen, take the kitchen sink, take it all. Get out of here. And I'm going to tell you what, had I been an Israelite and I'd been praying for a long time, I'd have been pretty ecstatic. I'm not a Pentecostal, but I would have acted like one that day. Can you imagine the excitement? Boys and girls, this is what we've prayed for. Moses is the deliverer. Pharaoh said that we could go. And my, there was a lot of rejoicing. But that rejoicing eventually stopped a few hours or days later when Israel found themselves between a rock and a hard place. On one side, they have the Red Sea. And behind them are the armies of Pharaoh and their horse and their hoofbeats coming their way. Now, I know all of us tonight, we're really spiritual. We'd say, well, I'll tell you what, had I been Israel, I know what I would have done that day. I would have stood up before the whole crowd and said, you know what, God just let us go from this bunch out here. He delivered us from Pharaoh and God's going to get us out of this mess too. You'd like to think that's what you were going to say. But you know what Israel did? Israel did, after a great victory, they did the same thing that we're prone to do. They doubted God. And you know, it's impossible to go forward in your faith as long as you're doubting God and unwilling to admit it. You know the challenge of a theme like that? I'll tell you what a challenge of a theme like that is. Sometimes in my life, I'm going forward and then I stop. I'm going forward and then I halt. Sometimes a circumstance comes and doubt enters my heart. It's like a continual work. And so tonight, I want to give you several things very quickly to think about as I talk about this subject of doubting God. Number one, everyone is capable of doubting God. Every last person in this room is capable of doubting God. Now, that might raise the hair on some necks, and you say, preacher, I'll have you know, I've been in this church 50 years. Well, that's good. As we'd say down here, and you can take it whatever way you want, bless your heart. You might be here, and you say, preacher, I'm a deacon, or I've been a Sunday school teacher. You say, I just want you to know, I've been around the block a time or two, and I don't like the way that sounds. Well, listen to me. A man who had an entire nation raised up after him doubted God. Abraham? Abraham doubted God. Moses, who was a man as meek of all in all the earth, Moses doubted God. Here we find that Israel doubted God. And my friend, the truth is there are times in our lives where people like you and me, we doubt Him. And we're not going to make any progress until we pull off the facades and we realize that the ground is level at the foot of the cross. And no matter how long you've been saved, no matter what position you hold, everybody in this room is capable of doubting God. And I find there are different stages in our lives in which we doubt Him. Somebody's on a mountaintop. Somebody's in a valley. But don't think you're immune to it. Because I know I'm not. Number one, everybody is capable of doubting God. Number two, doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Did you hear how these Israelites were talking? We just overheard the conversation while I was reading the text. Notice again in verse number 11. It says, "And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt?" Now listen to this, verse 12. "Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians?" Now listen to this, "For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." You know, doubt has a real way of playing with your mind. And it has a way of causing you to look back over across the fence and you say, you know what, things weren't really too bad back over there. It's like sometimes I talk to people who like to reminisce and they say things like this. They say, "Boy, don't you remember back in the good old days when we didn't have air conditioning?" You ever heard anybody talk that way? They do. They're saying that, and I'm like, really? "Do you have air conditioning now?" "Yeah, but boy, back in the good old days, we didn't have it." They remembered sitting out on the porch, but they didn't remember sweating 20 pounds of water every day. I hear people, they're like, "Oh, don't you remember the good old days when we didn't have indoor plumbing?" Something's wrong. My grandma, my mamma had an outhouse that was not in use when I was a kid. But when I went out there, I made up my mind I'd never want to use that thing. Now, some of you say, "Well, you've been modernized and you've been spoiled." I'll guarantee you there's not one of you in here that's got an outhouse today that's in use. And if you do, I'll gladly stand corrected. But isn't it amazing how our minds, I mean, we look back and we say, "Oh boy," let me tell you, that's exactly what doubt does. You know, doubt will cause you to look back and you say, "Well, you know what, when I wasn't living for the Lord or I wasn't saved, listen, I didn't have to deal with these problems. Maybe life was not that bad back then." Listen to me, people in the pews and maybe even people in the pulpit sometimes think that way. And our faithlessness skews our memories. You know what? If every one of those Egyptians really remembered what happened to them in Egypt, they would remember every mother weeping when they watched their children beaten to smithereens with whips. Their husbands bowing under heavy, unreasonable loads and coming back maybe a shell of the man that they used to be at the height of their health. Let me tell you, those Egyptians were horrible taskmasters and they did everything to make those Israelites' lives miserable. There was absolutely nothing in Egypt that was any better than what God was about to give Israel. And I want you to know tonight, ladies and gentlemen, listen, I'm not saying that life has been easy, but I'll make you this promise. Anything that you've been delivered from, I promise you, whatever Jesus gives you is far better. Amen. But doubt causes us to want to turn back. How do you know somebody's got a cold? They have a cough, they have a sniffles, they have a fever. How do you know somebody has faithlessness? Is when they look back and say, "I wish life was sort of like that." Number one, everybody is capable of doubting God. Number two, doubt will cause you to love the bondage of Egypt more than the deliverance of God. Number three, when we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. When we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. Now, the world's like, that. Something's wrong with that sentence. When we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. You ever heard somebody say, "This is a sure thing"? Well, I've learned, you know, an investor or anybody who says, "This is a sure thing," that just sends, I'm like, nothing's for sure. And there may be some of you in here and you're like, "Well, I'll tell you what, I just don't trust." You're like, maybe you're from Missouri, the show me state. You're like, if I don't see it, I don't believe it. Let me tell you, the surest things in this life, listen to me, are invisible. You say, that sounds spooky. Don't let it bother you. When you get out of the church tonight, you go look up at the stars and you see those stars. The heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament showeth His handiwork. Listen to me, I've never seen God, but there's a God in heaven.
Amen.
But you know my problem? So often I depend on the visible more than the invisible. I depend upon what I can see more than what I can't see. You can't go forward in faith unless you do what the Bible says, for we walk by faith and not by sight. If you walk by sight, you're trusting the visible. If you walk by faith, you're trusting the invisible.
Amen.
Now, I know the world thinks you're crazy. Listen, there may be some of your friends. They say, I'll tell you what, that's absolute nonsense. But you know what? You can pillow your head at night with peace in your heart. You can go about your business from day to day and have a strength that's higher than your own and make it from day to day when you trust in the invisible. Can I sum up for you what Israel's problem was? It basically was this, that the approaching hoofbeats of those of Pharaoh's army, can you imagine that? I guarantee it wasn't just one or two of them. Can you imagine a whole army as they're coming? And you hear that and you multiply it times 1,000. You feel the ground rumbling. You see the dust in the distance rising. That was a lot more real to them than God was. You want me to tell you why I doubt God sometimes? I doubt Him because I pay more attention to the hoofbeats than I do God. I don't know about you, but I hit cycles in my life. Well, I'll tell you, I feel like one day I'm living like Abraham at the pinnacle of faith, and then the next month it's like, woe is me. And I don't know where you're at in the cycle tonight, but maybe there's some of you here, as you approach the end of a year, you find yourself on a downward path. Why? Because you've paid more attention to the visible than the invisible. But when we focus on the visible, we doubt the invisible. I want to ask you, are you doubting God tonight? Number four. Doubt causes us to call God's character into question. Doubt causes us to call God's character into question. You know, there are two things every Southerner hates being called. Number one is a liar, and number two is a thief. I remember when I was in college, there were two boys talking and the one boy called the other boy a liar. And when that happened, it almost came to fisticuffs and I stepped in. So I think we just ought to all go out and walk a little bit. You enjoy having your character raked through the mud? You enjoy it when somebody says something about you that is not true? But you know, there are times when doubt enters our heart. It causes us to doubt God's love and His care for us. You remember the disciples in Mark chapter 4? They're in the boat. They think they're about to die. You remember when they woke up Jesus? Do you remember what they said to Him? You know, when somebody wakes me up, I want them to do it kindly and softly and gently. But they come to Jesus and they said, "Carest thou not that we perish? Can I just give you a good Georgia translation?" They said, "Don't you care about us?" Yes, yes, Peter, James, John, the disciples, they said that to Jesus. And some of us here tonight sitting high and mighty like it's a foreign language and we've never done that before. Shame on us. But you know what? Those boys, they let that storm cause them to doubt God's love and God's care for them. And it happens to people just like you and me. Our focus is on the wrong thing and we doubt God's care. We doubt His love for us. There's some people that say, there's no way God could ever love somebody like me. Listen, humanly speaking, you may think that, but I'm going to tell you, the Bible makes it clear, but God commendeth His love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. If you want proof that God loves you, just see a cross. You say, how could God care for anybody like me? Listen, Christian, God gives you an invitation, casting all of your care upon Him, for He careth for you. It seems like everywhere you go now, people want your money. Get fundraised to death this time of year. People want your money. Maybe they want to borrow something of yours. You know what God says tonight? He says, just give me that thing that weighs you down the most. Just give it to me. Why? Because I care about you. You ever remember the song, Does Jesus Care? When my heart is pained too deeply for mirth and song? How about this verse? Does Jesus care when I've said goodbye to the dearest on earth to me? I talked to a lady in Chesapeake, Virginia. I'll never forget this conversation as long as I live, just recently. She had lost her spouse, and she said, Alton, it was one of the hardest days of my life. But she looked at me and she said, but I'm going to tell you, a few weeks out, a few months out from this, I really believe I'm a better Christian today than I was that day. And it would have never taken place had this event not taken place in my life. But you know what? There was time she doubted. There's times question marks like that float through our mind. But can I tell you the beautiful thing about that song, Does Jesus Care? Don't live in the verses, live in the chorus. Oh, yes, He cares. I know He cares. His heart is touched with my grief. Sometimes we doubt God's love and His care. Sometimes we doubt His words and His promises. You ever had situations where you doubted what God said? You knew what He said. It's not a matter of knowing what He said, but doubting it in your heart. We know a lot, but sometimes we doubt what we know. Several years ago, my boys, it's hard to believe, this will make you feel old, Brother Jennings. My oldest son, Andrew, is 25 and Jared's about to be 21. And my daughter's 16, and your children make me feel old, so it's a mutual swap. But when my two boys were younger, they did something that they shouldn't have done. They scared my daughter to death. So much so that she would not sleep in her own bed at night. And I finally made up my mind, you know, I was like, this is a bunch of nonsense. And my daughter began sleeping with us. And you know what? That's cute for about 2 days. But when you can't get any sleep and your ribs are sore in the morning and you spend half the night on the floor, I said, that's it. And I took her one night and I took her up to the boys' bedroom and I said, that's it. I took her with a blanket and a pillow. I said, boy, she's sleeping with y'all tonight. And I mean, they just went into, a panic. To the point where they started weeping and crying and they're like, oh, please, Daddy, please, no, no. I mean, it was bad. And I looked at them and I said, all right. I said, I'll tell you what. If you promise me you'll leave her alone, I'll take her back down. And boy, I'm telling you, they promised and they kept good to their promise. But then the next few days, I had to get her to sleep in her bed again. And that was just a whole new era. There'd be nights where I thought the coast was almost clear. And all of a sudden, I'd hear a voice from the other side of the house. Daddy! Will you come sleep with me? And I'd make the track through the house and I'd come to the door and I'd look at her and I'd say, now, honey, I'll tell you what, I'll stay in here for a little while. She'd be like, no, I want you here all night. And I'd lay down that trundle bed that was sort of like concrete. And she'd say, now, Daddy, you are going to stay in here all night, aren't you? And I'd say, about that time, I'd say, boy, it sure was a pretty day outside, wasn't it, honey? And she'd be like, oh, yes, I went outside and I played with this and that. And right in mid-sentence, she'd stop and say, Daddy, you are going to stay in here all night with me, aren't you? And I'd say, how you like that bicycle that Nanny and Pap got you? That's a good, oh yes, it's great. The handlebars are straight for once and the brakes work. And I really like, now Dad, you are going to stay in here with me all night, aren't you? And it just got to the point as a parent, you know, these dorm students are laughing. I can't wait till it happens to them. And I knew there was no way around it. She was one track. I said, you know what, honey? I said, I will stay in here all night. And as soon as I said that, she looked at me and she said, you promise? I said, yes. Now go to bed. But you know, isn't it something how kids live off of promises. And there's some kids in here tonight. When you hear mom and dad say, I promise, you're like, you know what, that's as good as gold. But I'm going to tell you, sometimes it's not children that need to hear the words, I promise. Sometimes it's full-grown adults with houses and cars and checking accounts and doctor's appointments that need to hear God say, I promise. Maybe some of us tonight, the best thing we can do is hang our heads in an invitation and say, you know what, God, I've doubted your care and I've doubted your love for me and I've doubted your promises, but I'm not going to leave here that way. We find that our doubt causes us to question the character of God. But two other things very quickly. Number five, doubt will flee if you will go forward. Doubt will flee if you go forward. Now, I want to remind you how Israel has just talked to God and Moses. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. And then verse 13, and Moses said unto the people. Now I want to stop there for a moment. Had some of us been Moses, you know what we'd have said to the people? We would have said, hush your mouth. I don't want to hear it. Had some of us been Moses, we'd say, who do you think you are? But you want to know Moses? He said this. He said, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. He didn't lose his head. Now, I'm going to let you in on a secret. I don't think Moses knew that God was going to part that sea at that point. Now, if we get to heaven and God says, well, actually, He did, then I'll say I was wrong. But at least there's nothing in the text that leads me to think that God sets Moses down. He says, now, Moses, you're going to get in this hard spot. And when it happens, I'm going to part the sea and you're going to go across. All I know is Moses said, listen, fear ye not. Don't be afraid. Stay right here. And you better keep your eyes open because God's going to deliver us. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's faith. And after that, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will show unto you today. For the Egyptians who ye have seen today, and I love this, ye shall see them again no more forever. You ever had somebody say something to you in an emphatic fashion? Where they say it to you and they just sort of add something that's a little bit redundant, but they're trying to drive home a point. Moses said, you're not going to see these Egyptians anymore, and if that's not good enough, forever, the rest of your life. Moses was persuaded of God's promise in his heart. But notice in verse 14, the Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? And He said, speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. It's a little humorous. God says, Moses, what are you talking to me for? You need to go tell these people to go forward. Moses, you need to tell these people to march towards the very thing they fear. Moses, you need to tell them to go forward. And they have to go forward in faith. But as they're going forward into that uncertainty in time, God opens the Red Sea and does a miracle that would have never taken place had they not shown the faith to go forward. How do you get rid of doubt? Go to Walmart, go to the pharmacy section. They got worry pills. Just take them, right? No. No. Can I tell you, the only way I know to get over it is to take God at His Word and go. But your doubt will flee when you go forward. But here's the last thing I tell you tonight. Some of the sweetest songs that you'll ever sing come after a season of doubt. Some of the sweetest songs that you will ever sing will come after a season of doubt. You say, where do you get that from? Well, God delivers the nation of Israel. God parts the Red Sea. The Israelites walk through it. And then when the armies of Pharaoh come in after Israel's already out, God collapses the water on the Egyptian armies and drowns them. And do you know what the nation of Israel does after that? You're going to be surprised. They sing. Chapter 15. It says, then sang Moses, chapter 15, verse 1, and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. Brother Reem, I think music back then was a little different than music is now. I mean, music now, we talk about verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4. But when I read chapter 15, I don't really see verses. And I'll be honest, the text of the song, it sort of gets to you a little bit. Because here as they're singing, I'm not going to read down through here. But they're basically singing about the death of these enemies. It's like, God has drowned the enemy. You know, how'd you like to sing that? Imagine our brother get up and say, all right, we're going to lead music today. We're going to talk about people drowning. Let's sing it together. But it was a rehearsal of the miracle that God had done. And you know what? After they had hit rock bottom, when they decided to go forward, you know what? God gave that entire nation a new song. And maybe for some of you tonight, you just need a little hope. You say, I just wish, what can God do? I'll tell you what God can do. God can take a whole nation that was paralyzed by doubt, and when they make the choice to go forward, by the time you hit chapter 15, they're singing. You say, there's no way that God could ever cause me to sing again in my heart. There's some of you like, I can't carry a tune, but I just, you know what I'm talking about when your heart sings? Some of you may think, there's no way your heart can ever sing again. I want to tell you, God did it for Israel and God can do it for you. This summer while we were in Israel, Brother Reem was one of the first ones to come upon this. We were staying at the Olive Tree Motel or Hotel in Jerusalem. And I found out that night that Brother Reem had made his way out to a neighboring hotel. It was called the American Colony or something like that. And as he walked into that hotel, they had the original manuscript of a song that is very familiar to you right there on the wall under glass. They had the original manuscript written by H.G. Spafford of It Is Well With My Soul. I stood there and I read the text and I read the news articles that talked about the death of his children there on that watery grave. Here was a man who was a very well-to-do businessman. And while he didn't lose his money, he lost something far worse. He lost his daughters in a shipwreck. His wife puts word back saying, saved alone. And Spafford makes his way across the ocean to go comfort his wife. And it's during that trip, I'm sure a man who experienced a wealth of emotion, as any parent would, but somehow, somewhere along the way, God put these words in his heart. When peace like a river attendeth my way. When sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. You know what? That's been a song that's been sung in a lot of services, and a lot of tears have been shed. You know why? Because God gave a man a song after a season of doubt. Can I tell you tonight, when you leave this service, will you leave going forward in faith or will you leave doubting God? Will you leave tonight staring at Pharaoh's army or will you leave staring at God? It's your choice. May God deliver us all from doubting Him. Let's bow our heads together.